Hello, this is Tom Campbell, host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Dottie Holmberg from the Goldbriars. Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is October 29th, 2016, and I'm talking with Dottie Holmberg from the Goldbriars. This recording is taking place over the phone, as Dottie now lives in Florida. Dottie, could you please tell us your full name, date of birth, and hometown, please?
The name I was born with was D-O-T-T-I-E, but the showbiz name in the Goldbriars was D-O-T-T-I, and it's Jean, J-E-A-N, and last name Holmberg, H-O-L-M-B-E-R-G, and I was born in Los Angeles on February 15th, 1945.
And I understand you moved to Minnesota at an early age with your brother and sister, correct?
Yes, we were World War II babies, and there were a lot of divorces, well, probably like today, but back then there were quite a few divorces when the military guys came back, and that happened to my birth mom and dad in Los Angeles. And I was only 7 months old, and my sister was two and my brother was three when we were put on a train from Los Angeles to Minnesota to live with our grandparents. In those days, it was rare for the courts to award the kids to the father, but that's what they did. That was unique, and I was 7 months old, so I didn't know what was going on.
What's your earliest memory of you singing?
Oh, yeah, what a good memory. We would say that the grandparents lived on a farm, although they didn't have animals, but it was way out in the country, and their driveway was about a half a mile long, it seemed to be anyway. They had a lot of crops, you know, a lot of their food they raised. But for our entertainment, there was a radio, and our grandmother, she played the piano, and she taught my sister and I don't know why my brother wasn't singing. I don't remember him singing during that time at all. But she taught us 1940s and 1950s songs, and we absolutely ate that up and learned those songs. And I'm sure we did even a little bit of harmony way back then. I can picture me at about three and Sherry at four doing that. But that was our fun time of the day.
Whereabouts was the farm located?
Hugo, Minnesota.
That's north of the Twin Cities, correct?
Yes, uh-huh. And back in those days, the grandparents had 40 acres of land on a road behind us. And they were, I don't know, kind of like hillbillies or whatever. They had kind of a rough life. They had lots of children. They made their own milk, and they had cows. They made their own butter. They had their milk. They made their own butter. They made their own ice cream. But we had friends back there. Two of the kids were Sherry and my ages, so that was pretty cool.
Now, you went to White Bear Lake High School, correct?
Right. When my father remarried, we wound up in Matamidi for 1 year, and then we moved to White Bear Lake, Minnesota, and we were in the same house for 10 years. And so all the school systems, after Matamidi, it was kindergarten, and then from first up through 11th grade, it was all the White Bear High School schools, you know, the elementary, and actually the high school back in those days was 7th through 12th grade, and a great education. I think they probably were way ahead of maybe other states. That particular educational system was wonderful.
And you transferred in your senior year?
My dad and stepmom told me they were getting a divorce, and it was my the summer before my senior year, so I chose to move in with my grandparents, so I was back in Hugo, Minnesota. The closest school was Centennial High School in Circle Pines, Minnesota, so you had to, you know, go down this really long driveway, and the bus ride was long, and my grandfather in the wintertime had to drive me down the end of the driveway, or you would freeze, you know, walking that short distance. It was so cold out. But I had a wonderful senior year. It was a great year of my school life.
And you graduated in what year?
June of 1963.
Okay. Let's talk about your very first folk band here, the Keynotes. How did that come together?
Well, it's really funny. When I was growing up, I had a rough childhood. I won't even go into that because a lot of people did. But I don't remember my brother even, except for in church, singing or having a guitar. So he graduated 3 years before me, and Sherry 2 years before me. So during my senior year, they would come and pick me up. One of them would pick, well, my sister didn't drive, so Gary and his buddies would come and pick me up and drive me into the Twin Cities, and we wound up having like music jam to festive times. Gary would play the guitar, and there were other people back in those days who called it jamming. You probably call it the same thing today. And I found Gary to have this awesome voice. He had like a 3-octave range, sang like a bird, and would give you goosebumps when he sang. And of course, Sherry was this natural harmonious gal. She created harmonies off the top of her head. She was super talented. And Gary was meeting different people because the coffee house scene was coming into being. And one of the people he had met was Ron Nielsen, who was 16 but super talented, played the banjo and super lead guitar. And he would be jamming with Ron, and Sherry and I, who had been singing together as little, you know, toddlers, and had been performing for charities, and we currently had been performing in a nightclub. It was actually just for our supper, but it was a pretty exclusive place, and they really liked us. So we had the inspiration that Gary, Ron, Sherry, and I would form a group, because Sherry had been reading the newspaper and saw that the Grotto Auditorium was sponsoring a talent show. And so we, you know, had high hopes, and we filled out the form and mailed it in, and we knew what the deadline was and when the talent show was supposed to be held. We never heard from them. And Sherry was very outgoing. I wasn't an introvert, but she was theatrical and outgoing. And so she called up the Grotto Auditorium people in their office and read them the riot act that we never heard back from them, and that we didn't want to be in their talent show anyway. And they were so embarrassed. That's how we got in their talent show. They said, "Oh my goodness, you can be in our show. You can be in our show." Well, come to find out, when the show actually occurred, it was supposed to be people who had never won a contest before, like ourselves. What do you call that? Totally amateur hour. Yes, sorry, I lost that word, amateur hour. That was not the case, because all the people that they were announcing before us, that one had won a piano contest in Chicago. I mean, these people were coming from far and wide, and a lot of them were professionals.
Where was the Grotto Auditorium located?
In St. Paul.
Okay.
Okay. So we realized, no wonder why they didn't call us back. They had never heard of us. And it was supposed to be an amateur contest, but this was not what they were, you know, who they were having come on stage. So when we got on stage, we did If I Had a Hammer by Peter, Paul, and Mary, and the Limelighters song, Rockin', Rollin', Ridin', whatever that song is, Morning Town, right. So we did that, and Sherry and I had little, we looked like we had Scottish outfits on, little skirts with straps and white, you know, we looked real innocent and cute. Did our songs, and we got, you know, they clapped for everybody. We got a lot of response, and we were just getting ready to leave, you know, and the audience were, they were the judges. They judged who would win by audience clapping at the end. Well, we were just getting ready to walk out the door and leave. We had a good time. And they called us back because we won. We couldn't believe it. We actually won the contest. We won $50, which was a lot of money for back in those days. And that was in late 1962. so the MC asked us how long we had been together. I can't remember who he was, but he was a professional MC, probably of a radio station. And we said we had been together, I think it was three and a half weeks, and he couldn't believe it. He was choking on his words. But that was that was our beginning with Gary, Sherry, and I, and with Ron Nielsen, finding we could actually have an act together called the Keynotes.
What happened next with the Keynotes?
Shortly thereafter, I was going to high school still, and I only came into town on the weekends. They would come out to the farm, the grandparents' farm, and pick me up. And Sherry and I thought that Ron, Gary, Sherry, and I would continue on as the Keynotes. But we didn't know that, we knew Gary had another group called the Stowaways, which was another folk group, but we didn't know that they had priority over any secondary group, and they told him as such. Ron, Sherry, and I, on a very cold night in January, I remember it was practically storming. It was, really frigid out, and there was ice and snow everywhere. We stopped at the Lazoo Coffee Shop in, 1612 West Lake Street in Minneapolis in those days, to pick up Gary. And we went in there, and because the weather was so bad, there was, I don't remember any audience. It was like a really barren in there. So Sherry and I were sitting in the audience, and there was a cute little guy. He was kind of short and cute, singing his heart out on stage, and his name happened to be Kurt Betcher. And because it was such a dead night, the manager of Lazoo, Paul Hewitt, asked us to, Sherry and I just automatically started singing harmony in the audience because that was our natural thing to do, and we weren't trying to show off, but we were just having fun. Well, Paul Hewitt, the manager of the coffee house, came and took our jackets off and, highly encouraged us to get on stage with Kurt. We were a little shy about it, but we got up there with him, and we all started, Kurt, Sherry, and I started singing together, and it was like automatic, that golden blend that you would hope to find. Sherry and I already had the blend, and Kurt was just, it was like a perfect fit. It was pretty fun, it was pretty fun and exciting, and we decided, we'll have to get together again, and how can we get together? And Kurt was going to the University of Minnesota as a student there, so we decided to meet with him the following weekend. So Sherry and I went over, and, I can't remember how we got there, but Ron was not with us at that time. So Sherry, Kurt, and I started practicing together, and we decided, Kurt needed to join with us. We needed a fourth member for a fuller sound instrumentally and all, and so Ron joined us, and that was all in January 1963 that we decided to be a foursome, because Gary was first and foremost with the Stowaways, and we decided to be a group.
And who comes up with the name the Gold Briars?
Oh, boy. Well, as you know, folk music and coffee houses were everywhere. It seemed like they were on every corner. And it was a very fast fad that came to be, I'm sure it was nationally, but we only knew of Minneapolis. So we knew our blend was, we thought it was something special, and we started out with folk songs, so we thought, what can we call us? So we all put our heads together, and we thought the word gold is something special, and briar was like a common, you think of a briar as being a common name for folk or a plant, actually, but something more, something common. And then we thought, well, gold and briar, so we stuck an E in the middle just to combine, a silent E to combine the two words. So we wound up being at that meeting with Ron, the Gold Briars.
And how long did the band practice before they played live?
Well, we found that we could learn songs quickly. Sherry and I were used to working together since little kids, and Kurt was at that point, he was our leader, because even though Sherry was a natural harmony person, Kurt's harmonies were interwoven. He came from, we did a lot of jazz pop, Sherry and I, as a duet, but Kurt, with his background, living in Japan for a while with his family, his father being in the military, he creatively acquired in his musical ability, like traveling harmonies. I don't know if he was doing that with a duet. He had a couple other people he worked with that weren't from Minneapolis or not, but he actually told us what our harmonies would be, and Sherry had a lot of ideas, and I just would go with what he told the harmony, what my harmony would be, and we found ourselves weaving in and out of each other's voices, and there were occasions when sometimes I was the lowest part, but mostly the highest part. And Sherry and Kurt, you often couldn't tell who was singing what. They sounded, you know, so much alike with the lower parts. So, and Ron was just a musical genius with the banjo and the guitar. And we started out with folk songs. We learned Puff the Magic Dragon, Peter Paul Mary song. And in fact, one of our earlier times of rehearsing at the University of Minnesota, we were very lucky to witness Peter Paul Mary making a surprise appearance on the campus. And we heard about it, and we went out there and heard this new group, Peter Paul Mary, and we were just like, you know, couldn't believe how great they had that simplicity and the sound and the image, and it was very exciting. We knew they were I'm sure we heard If I Had a Hammer at that point, which was already a hit, but I hadn't really followed the group myself because I was going to school. But it was like unbelievable that we would get to see them in the beginning of their career when they were, you know, climbing the ladder. So it was an exciting concept, and we knew we had a different sound, and it kind of gave us hope that we could be unique in our own way as they were unique in their way.
Now, do you recall your first performance live, and when was it, and where was it?
Well, after being together for 3 weeks, because we learned songs very quickly, all four of us, even though I was only coming on the weekends, until I graduated, I could only play on the weekends, you know, for performing. But in 4 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks of rehearsing, Lazoo Coffee House wanted, you know, to hear what we had because they liked that initial sound that we had with Kurt on the stage that cold winter night. And so we went, showed him what we had, and we were hired, and we played there for, I think it was 14 weeks at Lazoo Coffee House. Our repertoire became bigger and bigger, and our sound became more a tighter sound, and pretty soon Sherry and I were wearing, black was our look in the beginning, because Kurt, the bulk of the image came from Kurt's concepts. We had black dresses on, they were right below the knees, and we had gold chains around our necks, they were sleeveless. And back in those days, in the beginning, you think about it now, it sounds terrible, we ratted our hair, you know, so we had these really bubbly ratted hairdos, these really sophisticated dresses and high heels. We started bringing in quite an audience, and we were there for, I think it was 13, 14 weeks, let me see. And during that time, people would come into the Lazoo Coffee House and see us, and the word was spreading, and we were starting to get other bookings besides Lazoo. So it was like a launching point of for publicity for us.
Now, you mentioned what you and Sherry wore on stage. What did Kurt and Ron wear?
Boy, they're wearing suits and ties and black pants.
Oh.
Kurt has a pair of... when we started at Lazoo Coffee House, we had the outfits on that I was telling you about, and the guys had white shirts, ties, and suit coats, and black pants. But then our first publicity picture that we took shortly thereafter, the guys both had black suits, white shirts, and black ties, and we still had those, you know, black outfits on with, we had gold heels and gold necklaces with our ratted hairdos.
What were the financial arrangements for the band to play at Lazoo?
Well, Kurt handled all the financial. I didn't, but I think we got paid a little bit in the beginning, and the audience, you know, the clubhouse, Lazoo Coffee House was, we were drawing quite a big audience, and as time went on, we didn't get paid anything. So it was like a one big fat rehearsal and getting our act together. But, you know, I have to be thankful for that. Even though we could have used the money, you know, Kurt, I was living with the grandparents, but Sherry, she was working during the day, and she was, there was money to be, there. We could have used the money, the group could have used the money. So, and the other things that we did around town, those were charities. All of those were charities, and charities are wonderful, and they give you good exposure. Sometimes you need a little extra money, you know, and Lazoo Coffee House was, you know, after a while they just quit paying us, and they were doing a decent business, so that's all I know. So finally we had to move on. It was 14 weeks. I see here it was a 14-week. As the customer fees doubled, the pay halved. You know, but we were able to build our sound and our repertoire. So if you look back on it, it was really a time to grow, for the group to grow and for to get exposure. A lot of people came in, and it was a launching point for us. So it was a gift in a lot of ways.
Now, I understand through Ron's father, a fifth member, so to speak, of the band joined. What is the story on Jezebel?
Right. Ron's father was, he was in the military on one of the islands, and he came back from the military with a fertility goddess. I'm sure he came back with other things too, but he somehow, someone gifted it to him, or he bought it. So one night, Ron brought it in, and Kurt and Ron decided to play a trick on Sherry and I, and they put this fertility goddess on stage with us at the Lazoo Coffee House. And in the beginning, we were, you know, really embarrassed. And they kept on doing it, but after a while, we took a liking to her, and we named her Jezebel and made her the fifth member of the group. And the audience, it was a talking point. The audience really grew to love her, too. They expected to see her on stage with us.